You're listening to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast, the podcast that teaches self-published children's book authors how to use branding to connect with readers, leverage content to sell more books, and grow a business that goes beyond the book. Being a children's book author means you've found a unique way to deliver messages with words and illustrations. But to thrive as an independent publisher, you'll need to master the art of attracting and engaging with readers so that you can sell more books. Join me to learn proven marketing strategies that can be implemented without hassle or complexity to take your publishing endeavors to new heights. I'm your host, Michaela Simone Benn, mompreneur marketing maven, fellow self-published children's book author and content creator. Are you ready to define success on your own terms? Then let's get to it.
Camera, we could be on here for a long
time. We absolutely could be. We could do this all night. So hello, and thank you for joining us today. You're joining me, Michaela, the host of the Children's Book Marketing Podcast, having a conversation with Miss Kanika Mobley. And she is the owner and co-founder of Stories of a Colorful World, which is a dynamic bookstore that promotes diverse authors, diverse books from all over. And we have been talking amongst ourselves. So we decided to just go ahead and press record because some parts of this might need to be recorded. Kanika, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited about our conversation. You know, we can go on for days talking about this. So I'm glad to be able to share with others as well.
I am too. And I'm wondering, before we get started, do you remember how we met?
I do not. It has been a minute.
It has been. I was thinking about how many years ago it was, only because the time has gone by so quickly.
And that was wait a minute. Was it Juneteenth?
It was Juneteenth, yeah.
Juneteenth, yes. Yeah. Yes, I do remember.
Yeah. So how we met, I'll start off with how we met because that sets the tone for a lot of why we are the way we are. And then I'll also allow us to have our usual banter conversation about the things that matter because they're significant. And if you're tuning into this episode and you're like, what can I expect? Well, here's a couple of things. Expect to understand what's the significance of online children's book retailer versus brick and mortar because they're not the same and they have to be approached somewhat differently. And then also understand that some of the people who are moving the pieces behind what happens in children's book literature awareness are wearing very different hats. So the hat that I wear is uniquely different from the hat that Kanika wears, which is likely not the same as somebody else who you might encounter who's in this space. But collectively, we all have the ability to work together in some way. So how we met was at the Juneteenth Festival in Atlanta, which I believe is the largest Juneteenth festival in the Southeast, but then somebody told me it was the largest in the country. Is that true?
Wow. I knew it to be the largest in the Southeast too, but maybe that is in fact true because they've been running for a very long time.
Well, if they are in fact the largest, it explains the magnitude of the three-day conglomerate that it is. But the first day, you're kind of like expected to set up and you get a chance to walk around and see who's setting up as well. So we didn't get to meet the first day that they gave us access. But then the second day, after all the tables were up and people are walking around and interacting and having a good time and meeting our neighbors, I saunter on over to another aisle when I get a chance to take a break. And the person who was helping me that day was just like, oh, do what you need to do. Take a break, stretch your legs. I'm like, yes, because what I really need to do is see who else is here. That was entirely a part of my event strategy. So I go and I run into you and Vanessa. And Vanessa, the co-founder of Stories of a Colorful World, was talking to somebody, and you were talking to somebody, and I'm just checking out the book selection. I'm like, they have every children's book that I am familiar with right now. They have people that I know personally. They have people whose name is only in lights someplace in a much higher zone of experience because they've been in the children's book writing world for a while longer. And then I'm like, what are the chances that we could partner together? So I gave you a book and I shared what the story was about, and you loved it, and Vanessa loved it. And we have been rocking together ever since summer of 2021.
Yes.
That day changed a lot for me. I had no idea that 3 days of 90 degrees in a row
and it made you warm.
It would be so worthwhile. But at some point, you just decide it's okay to sweat through everything and keep it moving because you're serving. And you're operating in your gift, you're operating in your purpose. And that was my introduction to Stories of a Colorful World. But where did it start? Where did you and Vanessa even get the idea?
So we actually started, I have been an educator for 20 plus years. And, you know, literature had always been my connection with my students and really thinking about how to make sure that I'm not just teaching them reading and writing, but also how to be whole human beings, mm-hmm. right? And I started off in Atlanta public school system. And so one of the things that I always found a challenge was finding books that represented the students in my classroom. And at the time, 20 years ago, you might get your snowy day, you might have, you know, a few, but there really were not a lot of books out there. And so always trying to do like research and find more when new books came out, trying to find books. And so there was a trip in 2017 that Vanessa and I went to. We went to Panama and we were supporting different orphanages and children's centers and things like that. When we came back, we were just like, okay, we want to do something to celebrate kids. We want to do something to have more of an impact. And so because Vanessa had always really embrace books. When I had my baby shower, she threw my baby shower and everybody had to bring a book. Literacy had always been in our world. So we were like, you know what? We're going to create. And we started off as a subscription box service.
I did not know that.
Yes. We started off as a subscription box service and we launched December 2019.
Okay.
And we were sending out monthly subscriptions. And then, just 3 months later, just a thing called COVID locked everyone down.
Yes, it did. Changed everything for a lot of us.
Changed everything. We were just trying to figure out a way. How do we, a new business, mm-hmm. kind of help, kind of sustain, continue our mission, but evolve into what the world had become.
Yeah. You were forced into a pivot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was like either we were going to shift and go with the new setting or fail.
I'm glad you chose the shift.
Absolutely.
Had you not chosen this shift, what were your alternatives at the time?
At the time, it was kind of like ride it out to see, because we didn't know what, mm-hmm. you know, in the beginning, it was like, 2 weeks, everyone will be shut down. But like as time went on, as time went on, we really had to figure out. So a lot of it was like listening to what customers wanted, kind of regrouping. We did newsletters to still get out information, mm-hmm. just to really still figure out what would be the best shift. We landed on creating the online bookstore and then relaunched in January 2021.
Got it. What that lends to is listening. Because on the one hand, you could easily say, okay, we have to do something differently. Let's just do this.
Right.
But you waited to see what the demand required. And that doesn't happen a lot in our genre. Because what happens is somebody makes a change or they make a move and then suddenly they're like, okay, I should just write another one.
Right.
Instead of saying what the audience wants or what their readers want, they just assume I'll write the next book because people liked my first book. They'll like my next book.
Absolutely.
Asking and validating before executing was the smart choice that you took, which landed you here. Once you made the shift and the world started to reopen, how exactly did you go about finding authors to carry in your store?
To be honest with you, when we relaunched, we only had 10 titles. Initially, we were working just with traditional publishers. Mm-hmm. So sourcing from traditional publishers, then the more we got out into the world and we started doing pop-ups and meeting authors, that's when we started to hear from other people about great books that they would love for us to have, more research into books that were coming out. And that was one of the times when we started really wanting to make sure that we heard different voices, because we were getting recommendations of independently published books. We were like, oh my goodness, these are great. But there was such a stigma around independently published books in terms of not being as great quality or all of these things that we were finding not to be true.
Right. Before I got into it, I think the belief was whatever you could slap together and sell on Amazon made it a published book.
Right.
And the quality started to improve as the world made self-publishing more acceptable.
Right.
There were some stragglers who may not have embraced the new expectation of what children's books should look like, either with the illustration or how they should be handled with professionalism and the editing and the presentation, but they may or may not have stood from one year to the next. That leads me to ask, what do you look for in the titles that you embrace and say, we can proudly offer this to our readers and we can feel good about promoting it on the socials as well?
We do have a team of people who review. And one of the main things, particularly in picture books, is illustrations. The illustrations have to be quality.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly for us, because we have books from traditionally published authors and from independently published authors, when we go out, books have to stand toe to toe. The first thing, I know there's the saying, don't judge a book by its cover, but that's what customers do. When you're going to look for a book, you're judging it by its cover. And if it's not captivating, then you're not going to buy it.
So true.
Hey, it's Nikella. Real quick, I got a question for you. Have you already subscribed to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast? If you haven't, then I want to invite you to do that right now on your favorite streaming service. That way you never miss an episode. Each time an episode goes live, you'll always be notified and it will be there waiting for you. So you never have to try to go find it and lose track of it among the hundreds of other things that you have going on. When you subscribe, you're showing your support, of course, and I appreciate that. So I want to thank you for tuning in. Now, back to the podcast.
And this is probably the only aspect where it is okay to judge a book by its cover. Is that
absolutely.
The more the cover says about the story, the better it is. Not just from a sales standpoint, but from intrigue perspective.
Absolutely.
And so now I feel a degree of humility and honor that the little Mr. Fix-It Assist with the to-do list cover passes muster. And
absolutely.
My illustrator and I can't say enough about her. She is an amazing artist, but she's an artist. She isn't right. somebody who just decided one day, I'm going to take this graphic design talent of mine or my knack for being able to sketch and play around with it. She's a portrait artist. And the quality that she's shown with my children's book and other children's books that she's published and all of the assets that I have as a result of her artistic genius being such a great fit for my creative direction, I don't know that I could have invested less or spent less time trying to get it right.
Right.
That was the longest part of the entire self-publishing process. It wasn't waiting on the books to arrive. It wasn't getting through copyright. It was illustration.
Yes.
When people say, I have a book and all I need, this is where it minimizes it for me. All I need, I just need to get it illustrated. There is a whole module in an entire program that is an entire process and system dedicated to it because we cannot overlook that.
No, it is one of the major things that I always recommend. If you're writing a book, one of your biggest investments should be in your illustrator. Your illustrations have to be on point because you can have the greatest story, but nobody's going to read it.
Yeah.
You're going to have fewer people reading it if they're not captivated. Kids, coming from a teacher standpoint, right? Kids mm-hmm. have to be captivated by the story. And a lot of times, particularly with picture books, it is the illustrations that they're captivated by that intrigue them, that make them want to keep listening. Because again, kids have short attention spans. In order to really have that flow in terms of the story content being engaging, the illustrations also have to be married with that in yeah. order to really create a dynamic book.
You're right. And as a parent, the hat that I wear as a parent doesn't respond favorably to every style of illustration.
Right.
There's a style out there for everybody.
True.
But the realistic is what intrigues me most. That's where I tend to look for covers, where you've got some that are whimsical and cute mm-hmm. and they're really cool. I like those. You have some that are heavy on the AI. I'll take a look. But then you've got some that are abstract. And right. for a child whose imagination is taking shape, there's a need for all three. It's just Absolutely. A matter of what's your preference. And I love how you have such variety and breadth, not just in the titles, but in the content that is covered in the stories that you have curated into your collection. The collection that you have is managed in an offsite way, but sold in a very direct in-person kind of way.
Absolutely.
That's something that I think helps manage inventory in a way that most children's book authors aren't familiar with. We see books on a shelf. We right. see books at a bookstore, and we think there must be some magical place where there are hundreds of boxes. And that's not true. What does it look like behind the scenes of an online retailer that's a little bit different maybe from a brick and mortar?
It is. We have a lot of inventory that we carry in-house just because we do have online orders. So us shipping them out. And we also do a lot of events, being able to have those titles on site. But we also make sure that we kind of manage our inventory in a way that we can order books based on what we're seeing in terms of customer need and even times of the year. And so really having inventory to be able to share with people out at our events. we increase that inventory.
You have such a unique approach to events. I want you to describe it because it is entirely why I don't do that many events. Not from an intimidation standpoint, because when you come, you bring it. You bring the books, you bring the energy. You are the booth that has the greatest selection of books. If there is another book store set right. up at an event. And I've been to enough events to say some have just the nonfiction books, some have the children's books. But here's why I don't do a lot of events, because you do. And that's a strategic decision on my part. Aside from where I am in life and the stage of it, Saturdays are for soccer when you have a 6-year-old. And I had to make a conscious decision how to spend the time that I have on the weekends, which is when most of the events take place. I got to look at this thing. And for any children's book author who's trying to figure out how do I manage to host events or vend at events or participate in events or sponsor events, one of the ways that you can defray some of the resources that you have, limited human resources, because you're probably a one woman or one man show, is to partner with people who are strong in areas that you are not.
Absolutely.
Stories of a Colorful World fulfills for me a role that I do not have space to fill in my business right now. I'm so grateful for you in that regard, but I'm also intrigued by how you make the magic happen. And because we partner in this way, I promote your stuff. I even promote when you're not promoting my books. Okay. Because you're going to be a lot of places that I'm not going to be. The complimentary aspect just can't be beat. And I think it's really important to note that you go to a lot of events, not just in New York City and around the East Coast, but you're everywhere. How do you choose? How do you choose what's the right place for you to show up?
A lot of it is there's a community in terms of vendors at events that I've grown to love. And with that community, you start hearing about more events. You start hearing about which ones are successful. I told you we took that pivot in 2021. And the thing that saved us was actually getting out and starting to do events, being out in the community. Because as much as we like to shop online, people still like to hold books. They still like to look through when they're shopping for them. They still like to have that bookstore experience, especially when there are fewer independent bookstores or even bookstores in general. Like you said, we're usually the only bookstore there. That gives us an advantage. And the selection that we have is generally different from other vendors or other people who are selling books there. I just get the energy from people every single time. There is going to be someone who's like, or, oh my goodness, I wish I was a kid. Like that every single time really like gives the energy to keep going, because doing events is a lot.
It is.
The setup, the breakdown, the all day. But I really love it. I feel like with each year that we've done it, we've added more things. So now we also have like a kids table where we might have activities for the kids or coloring or something to engage the kids. Because again, mm-hmm. that also brings the kids in and gets right. them excited and gives the parents sometimes time to look through the books without the child saying, "Mom, mom, mom."
Yeah, I've experienced that. At your booth, by the way. When we
connected. No, not Mason.
Oh my goodness. Mason could not wait. Mommy, I want this book. Mommy, I want that book. When I gave Mason the opportunity to make his selection, and I think we have it on video. I have to see if I can find that video and share it. He literally froze and then he did a 180 and was like, "Where do I start?" He was in love. He was in heaven.
What we always love. And it's like sometimes we'll be in places and we'll see the kids, you know, like see a certain book from across the room or across the street or something. And they're like, they'll beeline it over to our booth, or they'll walk past and then you see them walking back with their parent and they're like, they brought me back here. And so that is always the energy that we love.
Yeah. Now, see, I always tell children's book authors, make it so that you can go out and introduce yourself to the other vendors, because you don't know who your partners are going to be. But it's also helpful to have your children validate for you where the interest is, because that can unveil a partnership right there. Before I decided to release puzzles, I interacted with somebody who was selling puzzles because I wanted to understand how much in demand are they? And what's the reaction? What's the response? So it's also a good way when you're at events and you're looking at other exhibitors, if you're thinking about introducing additional merchandise, if you want to see how people respond to it, see how people flock to a booth.
So much research can go into being at the event, not just being there, but just finding out what people like. And that's also one of the things that helps us to think about different books that we want to add to the collection as well, seeing what people gravitate to. Or in those times, people will give suggestions. There are a number of books that we've added because we kept hearing someone ask for a specific book.
Mm-hmm. That is so responsive. So there's a couple of things that I'm hearing. You're reader-led, and the decisions that you make are based on research. This is not just how it feels. This is, what does the data say? What is the request from the people who come and support us? That part right there, I think, could save people a lot of heartache, a lot of hurt from introducing something that they don't quite know is proven and worthwhile.
And just being adaptable, because the market also changes. Like 2 years ago, we couldn't keep enough board books on our shelves. And then last year, I was wondering, did anybody have any babies? Because
now that stopped after COVID.
We're like, I'm like, we couldn't keep these off of the shelves, and now we're still selling, but not at the rate. And so just knowing that seasons and times change too. So knowing, being able to listen to and respond to what's happening.
Do you know what should happen after you have finally completed the writing and publishing of your children's books? You should be able to get your books in front of the right readers, and you should be selling on multiple platforms so that you can have the greatest impact possible, which I would imagine is what you set out to do when you decided to become a children's book author. But is that happening for you? Are you reaching more readers consistently enough to feel confident about the impact that you're having? Are you reaching enough of the people who you can partner with that can ultimately get your books in the hands of the people that support the programs that they've designed for children and for kids of all ages? If you're not, you may need to take my free mini course. It will teach you how exactly to generate direct sales from retailers, program partners that have extensive audiences of your ideal reader, and how you can sell more books from your website. If selling is something that hasn't come easy to you, and you know your children's books need to be in the hands of more people, take the free mini course. It's available right now at childrensbookmarketing.co/resources. It won't be free forever, so don't wait too late to make it happen. Now, back to this episode.
Yeah. You know, speaking of respond, I follow you every place that you go online. And I look often to your recommendations because you introduced me to books that I didn't even know were out there. But I specifically look for books now in the early chapter book segment because there are not a lot for us, particularly for boys.
Absolutely. And
whenever I'm following you in a reel or something that you release on TikTok, I'm looking for the synopsis that you give. Can you share a little bit about how you interact with social media and why you've chosen the strategy that you have? Because part of it is just so funny, I can't not watch. But then the other part of it is so informative that I look forward to seeing what you're going to suggest next.
This social media journey has been just that, a journey. I am constantly learning and growing. A lot of what we found was people wanting to have more suggestions. Also knowing we're running into the same issues too, or the things like listening to comments that say, do you have another book featuring a male character? Do you have chapter books or middle grade books around this certain topic? And that helps to figure out, oh yeah, I have one for that. And so being able to listen to that and know what people are looking for really helps to create that content. Or because we're online, you know, a lot of social media is a lead magnet. How can we get people onto our website? How can we get them to know? A lot of our work is about amplifying BIPOC voices. And so how do we get them to know about authors that are maybe not on the New York Times bestseller list or not written by a celebrity? Just getting that information out there, social media has been a great platform to be able to drive people to work that they might not know about otherwise.
Yeah. There's a lot of response that I suspect you're making to questions that you get from people who are in awe about the selection that you carry. And they're not always posed in the most favorable way, I believe, these questions that come to you, because your response is a jest, but it addresses the thing that somebody wants to know about. And from a professionalism standpoint, we have to remember that it's okay to be yourself.
Absolutely.
It is okay to be authentically 100% genuine in how you respond, but keeping in mind that we do run businesses.
Absolutely.
We don't want to say things that are going to shut the doors. However, you get some really interesting questions that you respond to in the socials with your humor. And your particular brand of humor, I just get it. What are some of the things people ask you that make you know that in 2024, the platform that you operate as an online children's book retailer of diverse books is absolutely needed? Because I think those are the ones that you have to carefully decide, am I going to respond out of my feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to respond out of my integrity?
There are a lot of different questions, but there are also comments. I always try to lead with empathy and with the understanding that some people just don't know, or some people are well-meaning and again, they just don't know. Sometimes I receive comments, particularly because our full collection is curated featuring books around BIPOC main characters written by BIPOC authors. And so because we're in this stage where people are talking about diverse books and inclusion, that some people think that that books that feature diverse characters are just for people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, they're for everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone can benefit from seeing characters that both look like them and do not look like them or have, you know, have traits like them or characteristics or, you know, experiences that are similar to theirs and those that are different from them. And so I try to find a way that's engaging to really drive home that point. No, this is not just for a certain group of people. And I think some of it comes out of also the frustration in big bookstores as well. Mm-hmm. For so long, books that feature characters of color are like in this ethnic aisle. We had to go to a certain place to go and find those books versus, no, I want an adventure book. There are plenty of adventure books from different types of characters.
Yeah.
Why can't I just go to the adventure aisle?
Right.
Why can't I just go to the rhyming aisle and find a book that has a diverse cast of characters? Right. And so I think part of it is breaking that piece into understanding that books should also reflect the world that we live in.
Absolutely. Is that what informed the name Stories of a Colorful Yes. World, that belief?
Yes.
Yes. So profound. And I don't think that it is an accident that you're branding the embodiment of the concept that you just described is so consistent across what you share and what you do. So I've got another question for you. And it's around understand what it is that the future may hold in your estimation. We've been in this now, both of us, for 3 to 5 years.
Yep.
The Little Mr. Fix-It book was written in 2020, released in 21. Your store started around that same time. And we've seen some shifts. We've seen some things that have changed.
Yes.
What are some of the things that are impacting you as a bookstore from a trending standpoint that might not have existed? Like you said, a couple of years ago, board books were the thing. What are some of the things that people have responded to differently than they had in the past about the bookstore?
I think because the world is shifting and changing, responses are also shifting and changing, right? There is the positive because now there are so many books that kids can choose from. Whereas, like I said, when I started 20 years ago, baby, you were finding scraps. You were digging through the crate.
That's a good thing that I had a child when I did, because 20 years ago, we would not have had the selection.
Absolutely. And now there are a lot more for kids to choose from. And what makes me hopeful about that is that there'll be a time where some kids, particularly the youngest of kids, it's going to be the norm. They're not going to understand this is not extraordinary for some people, right? Yeah. What does give me pause is the growing number of book bans and the strategic push to reverse
yes.
things. Right now, while there is kind of pushback against the growing support for inclusive and diverse books, I think it's actually more needed for our voices to be out there.
Yeah.
You can ban a book, but you can't come in and take it out of my bookstore.
Right. You cannot do that.
You might be able to take it out of the classroom. You might be able to take it out of the library, but you can't come and take it off my shelf.
No, you cannot.
Before we go on to the next subject, let me ask you one quick question. Have you learned anything yet during this podcast episode that you didn't know already? If that's the case, please do me a favor and go leave a review of the podcast. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also leave a review on Spotify. Either way, I love your feedback, and I really want to know what you're taking away from listening to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast. And oh, by the way, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast. That way, you're notified each time a new episode airs, And when it goes live, you will want to be the first to know. I really do appreciate you listening and tuning in. Now, let's get back to the episode.
There are powers at play that attempt to silence those of us who have a platform in literacy, which is not new. For anyone who's not familiar with the history, this would not be the first generation of readers that are being suppressed. That's the best way to put it. The channels that exist for us to navigate this differently, the institutional knowledge that we have about how to navigate that didn't exist in previous generations in the way that it does now. So to combat said forces, I feel somewhat better equipped.
Yes.
I do feel that.
Yes. I think we have more tools to be able to do that, right? To expand into places that are not just local or regional, but national or worldwide. And I think that is something that is helpful in continuing to get the word out.
Yeah. And you've got good advocacy also on the corporate side. Can you talk a little bit about the event you had with Pepsi?
Yes, that was a great one.
I know. And I wanted to learn more about it because when I saw it, considering PepsiCo's commitment to diversity.
Yes.
And it having been in place for the duration of time that I have been familiar with the company, all the way dating back to Michael Jackson and the Thriller jacket. That's my earliest recollection of PepsiCo. To applying and interviewing for the companies when I was in undergrad, when I was in grad school, they've always been a proponent for diversity and inclusion before it was popular. I don't drink Pepsi and I don't enjoy any of their products. However, I do support that mission.
Right.
And when I saw you there at their event, I openly applauded. Because they're closer to us now than they had been. Yeah, okay, I was a Pepsi drinker back in the day. But for now, for what's needed today, that they've continued to maintain relevancy in these issues and you're at the center of it. I was like, oh my goodness, they're making a difference through somebody I know. That's the part that made it feel better. Not that I almost went to go drink a Pepsi. I did it. I did it. But that they're doing it through something that is pertinent to my day to day.
Right.
I wish they sold something I could buy. I just wish they did. Tell us a little bit about your partnership and how that even evolved.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I was introduced to Pepsi through one of their employees who actually came to our Bryant Park booth. Mm-hmm. During the holidays, we were awarded a booth in Bryant Park's Winter Village through Bank of America. And that was such an amazing opportunity because people worldwide come to Bryant Park during that time. Mm-hmm. And so we had people from all over the world coming into our booth and talking to us. There were so many people who we were able to start relationships with. One of the employees from Pepsi came in, and when her coworker reached out to us, she said that the employee came in and was so excited. It was like, we have to have them for our International Women's Day event. Mm-hmm. We came in for their International Women's Day event. I've never seen anything like this. It was amazing, something that they did for their employees. It was a day, and just thinking about inclusion and advocacy for their women, they brought in masseuse, they brought in makeup artists, they brought in all of these vendors to purchase. I was looking back at the photos from that day, And before the employees came to the vendor market, they were in the amphitheater. And I didn't know what was going on in the amphitheater, but apparently Mary J. Blige was there.
You did not share that part.
I'm like, what? This is what they're doing, continuing to really support. There was a woman who worked there, and she was like, this is the biggest event that, she was like, they do markets regularly, but like, this was the biggest one. And she said, I think she had been working there like 15 years.
Wow.
And so she was just really talking about how they're continuing to build on that work. It was great to start that partnership with them and then continue on and do like other events with them as well.
Yeah, that is such a dynamic opportunity for books, BIPOC authors, the alignment, the support, the presence. You're not limiting yourself in your reach. And why this is so significant is because your bookstore is not like all bookstores. You're a children's book author, you're looking at children's book retailers. There's some things you want to look for. Not right. Just is it the right environment because it's the right reader? That's one thing. You want to look for what type of relationship you can have with the retailer, but also what type of relationships the retailer has in a larger context outside of what you're able to access.
Absolutely.
At no point would I ever find myself in the women's annual empowerment event for PepsiCo. It wouldn't happen, but you're there.
Right.
And the strength of that relationship will flourish and will continue to grow, and it will lead to others. One of the reasons I wanted to make sure the children's book marketing podcast community got a chance to see what you do is because when you peel back the curtain, it's bigger than the books.
Absolutely.
It's so much bigger than that. And for a lot of us who've made a decision about what type of author we want to be, for a lot of us, it's bigger than the books too. So when you have to make a distinction about who you align with people who are on a train that's going the same direction that you would like to go in at the same speed.
For sure. That's something that absolutely continues to help us evolve as well, because we have our online platform. We go out and do events. And so probably about the end of last year, we also started partnering with brick and mortar retailers. We partner with a company in South Jersey, Curate Noir. They have two retail locations, but their location is like an incubator space. Plus, it's also curation of Black and Brown businesses. So we curate the children's books in their spaces. In addition to us doing our part in our work, we're still trying to amplify and create audiences in other spaces that we don't even have access to, or we might not be on a day-to-day, right? They have a retail location where they are 7 days a week. We're not in a brick and mortar store where we right. have like that constant. And so like continuing to build those partnerships really helps to continue to grow that reach for authors.
Bravo, Kanika. Bravo. That is how you grow. That is not common for bookstores. So I am going to encourage you, when you're thinking about where you can list your books, to submit to Stories of a Colorful World for consideration. Because if it's a good fit and your illustrations are carefully, thoughtfully, intentionally laid, then you definitely want to be in partnership with this bookstore. Kanika, where can people find you to make sure they connect with you online and if they want to submit their books?
Definitely find us on our website, storiesofacolorfulworld.com. Also, we're on all social media platforms. Instagram, we are Stories of a Colorful World, but world with no O. Then Facebook and TikTok, we're also Stories of a Colorful World.
All right. I will put links to each of those in the show notes. Thank you.